Alright, people, welcome to episode 155 of Bloody Thumbs Podcast. We're back again. It's almost at this point like a monthly podcast. We do that monthly podcast. That's how we do it.
Mm-hmm. So, whenever there's good subjects to talk about, we like to go around the campfire and just jaw on about what our feelings are in situations.
Yeah, so I'm glad to be back recording this fine podcast with you, good sir. I just wanted to bring up something with you here. I know that it's one of those things where we just do this on a monthly basis, and people have always been bringing up when we'll do another recording, but it really comes down to our schedules, really. I'm really mm-hmm. looking, ideally, I definitely like to do it at least more than once a month, like at least maybe like the first week of every month and the last week of every month will be pretty nice, like two in a month. So we'll probably get that going just to get it a little bit more out there rather than just kind of maybe having some type of set schedule just so that it's just not completely random and people don't know when the heck we're coming out. So just wanted to bring that up, see what we'll do with. I guess we'll talk about that off the podcast, but we're just gonna move on forward here and get that going, that positive direction going here with the show. So yes, like I mentioned, we're back again, the 155 episodes. The good old Bloody Thumbs.
Good times. So 155s of golden glory.
Yeah, we just got off a little short conversation about iced coffee and some foods that are best served cold and hot as well. So that's definitely, let us know what you guys would think about that. Because we talked about, I brought up Pop-Tarts are pretty good cold and hot, and
pizza
and some pizza.
A good portion of meats. Also, just like prepackaged, like bologna or turkey or ham, where you could just have it cold on a sandwich, or you could heat it up. It's up to you, the viewer.
Yeah, and some shrimp. Sushi recently, I've had some servings of shrimp, hot and cold. So that one's pretty good.
Oh, well, I haven't had sushi in a long time. I actually was trying to go on something called the IP diet, which is like a Weight Watchers thing, and I've actually lost 10 pounds on it, so I'm very, very happy about it. It's essentially you go into ketosis at only eating vegetables and like prepackaged foods that just essentially like protein and vitamins disguised, like, and then like slightly flavored to be like tasting like food. It doesn't really taste great, but it's like, oh, okay, this actually works, and your body just burns through all that. Of course, you have no energy for anything. So it's like, I'll take my dog for a stroll around the block, and he'll just, and then as soon as we get back home, I'll collapse into a couch since I don't have any more energy. But fortunately, I'm winding down with that.
Yeah, I've been on the opposite route, on the splinter diet, where I just eat everything in sight and just lay in bed. That's pretty much it. Gained a good 10 pounds.
I'll send you some of mine if you. I don't want it, and you want it, so we'll think of an exchange rate of some sort.
Yeah, get that going.
Mm-hmm. It's I'm very, very happy about it, and I'm looking forward to finally going back to the gym since I can now eat carbs and others and fruit. You can't have fruit either, which is weird just because there's like a lot of natural sugar in there. So anyway, looking forward to going back on the back on the gamer diet of Mountain Dew and Cheetos. So looking good, and then being forced to go back to that just because going back to the other diet since I'll probably break it too much.
Yeah, I hear you. It's hard to get that kind of habit going when you're so used to eating what you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and speaking of eating what you want, we have Halloween coming up, eating of candy, and of course, your favorite themed Halloween stuff like this time of year. Well, how about we talk about what we'd like to do this time of year and how we celebrate, even if it's not Halloween itself? Is there any specific things that you do this time of year?
Nothing in particular. I've been meaning to actually start a tradition of playing some, I guess, horror-themed games every year. Like, I used to have my own thing going on where I would play Max Payne 2 every year. I haven't done that at all this year, but I was looking to actually play...
The year's still young.
I'm still looking to actually play some Deadly Premonition Director's Cut. I actually purchased that a couple of weeks back. It's a PC version of it. I got it off of Good Old Games. And
GOG.
Yeah, after some tinkering, I got everything to kind of work smoothly and added some texture packs. I've only played like the first chapter of Deadly Premonition Director's Cut, but there's definitely some changes in there in terms of gameplay. There's no tank controls. The control scheme's a bit different. I was a little bit taken aback with the controls. Like, it's just, I mean, there's no tank controls at all. It plays like a third person shooter, and I was so used to it being so clunky. What was that?
Wait a minute, this isn't completely clunky and impossible to control? This can't possibly be the Deadly Premonition I know.
I know, it feels weird because I played that game so many times. I guess I forced myself to get used to like how kind of not so good it handles, but like they actually kind of upped the ante on it. They kind of made some improvements on how it plays, and there's no compared to like the original version, there's no set difficulty level. It's like there's just one difficulty level. It's a combination of easy and normal, which is which give or take, which however you want to go about it. Because the enemies are pretty, they don't take as much bullets as originally they did. I haven't even gotten to the part where you fight the wall monster. I'm curious to see how long that fight takes. Because the original one, if you just have that, you know, basic 9mm equipped, and you didn't really do any side missions to get better weapons, you're gonna be there like at least half an hour trying to kill that that wall monster boss. That was a pain in the ass. That original version.
Yeah, figuring out how to play that game is fun, since they don't really give you any tutorials except for like these open doors. Like, well, how do I kill these guys? Well, that's something you gotta discover for yourself.
Yeah. Like I mentioned, the control scheme is different as well. Like it's actually plays like a third person shooter. Like before on the 360 version, you gotta go back. And when we originally played it, it was like you hold down the right trigger to aim and press the A button to fire, which is like the most oddest shooting control scheme ever.
The other way around or something.
Yeah, I actually wanted to go. It actually lets you change it. So, but I've gotten used to actually playing it the way that designed it. There's very slight improvements. Like they actually made the character models a little bit better for mainly for Anna. Like the girl who got killed in the beginning, she looks a lot different in the opening cinematic. She actually looks, there's actually more detail to her. She's not as fugly as she was in the original.
Yeah.
And
can't blame them, just because Deadly Premonition at its best looks like a PS2 game.
Yeah, it still does too. Like even in like the opening cinematic, it shows a lot, especially the grass. You know how the grass looks in that game?
Oh my! Goodness. Oh good lord! It's like three like tan lines, or like to differentiate between like, okay, these are cattails or weeds. Just like, and oh, the motion of it, like waving through the wind, it looks kind of like I don't know. I'm trying to think of like a gently waving sign, just like something that looks very stiff and very odd.
Right. I mean, other than that, there's kind of overall presentation difference. Like the menus are a bit more cleaner. More color to them, just like the items, and there's like a little bit of a kind of heartbeat animation going on your health meter. And actually, while you're driving, they kind of took a nod from like Grand Theft Auto. When you're driving, you can actually expand the map, so it'll actually in the bottom left hand corner, it'll actually expand a bit more larger, so you can actually see kind of where you're going. So you don't have to keep going in and out of the map. But when you do that, it's a little bit weird. It kind of gets a little fuzzy when you're driving, so I wouldn't recommend using it that often. Actually, when I was actually testing it out, it was a little weird. But really beyond that, there's some new cinematics in there, which I haven't seen fully, but I haven't really played it all to completion to really get an idea on how this plays. It's definitely worth getting because it was only $24.99, I think. And it's for the there's a PC version of it and PS3 version. So if you haven't played it yet, definitely give it a try. And because it's a lot more accessible now because the controls are a little bit better and it plays a little bit more smoother. But we'll see if I get the chance to play some more of it this month because it's near Halloween. I may go out and do that. See what's going on there.
Of course, Deadly Premonition is one of those. David Lynch. I'm really glad that they. You know, with video games, we take different inspirations from different places, you know, because there's, especially with horror, because you got the Clive Barker series of video games, you got Alan Wake being very influenced by Stephen King. Stephen King should have sued, honestly, but whatever, it's in the game, and then Deadly Premonition, which is very David Lynch inspired. I love that it is, just because with the David Lynch universe, there's incredibly... Oh, by the way, Twin Peaks is coming back.
Yes.
On Showtime, I think, and just like, yes, I'm so glad they're like Arrested Development, Twin Peaks. I'm really hoping they go for another season of Firefly on Netflix or something like that. But they're bringing back a lot of old shows, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do next. And what the hell was I talking about? Oh yeah. With the David Lynch sort of sensibilities of horror, that means that you can be just kind of weird and outside the norm, and you don't need to be diegetically true to what the world is that you would expect, and have really weird characters and have really weird places. It still makes sense, and the effect is even more scary just because it's more removed from reality.
Yeah. I mean, if he ever were to do a straight up horror movie, that's gonna be something spectacular. If he ever did a straight up horror movie,
I think the only type of horror movie he could do is Cthulhu, just like because that's the closest thing to his own sensibilities, where it's like the story goes off and derails and becomes crazy and hard to understand because like the more you know, the more insane you become.
Yeah.
And I like that sort of idea of like you can't, like the horror that's actually out there is so mind-bogglingly beyond our comprehension that we go crazy trying to understand it.
Well, speaking
and
of
David Lynch has probably seen that. That's why he makes his movies like that.
Yeah,
Mulholland awesome. Drive. This man is obviously crazy.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. I definitely enjoy and also. I enjoy his movies and also get confused by them, but I enjoy them nonetheless.
I think that's everybody. I think everybody's confused by them by the end. It's like I'm pretty sure even David Lynch is sitting in the audience and he's thinking to himself, "What the hell did I just put up there for everyone? I put that up there for people to see."
Yeah, I'm very excited to see what they do with the Twin Peaks revival because you know. By the end of like the last episode of Twin Peaks, there was definitely some. There was more answer. There was some more questions left than answered, for sure. The way that ended.
Yeah.
And Deadly Premonition, you know, going back to that, I mean, it's what got me into Twin Peaks because I've heard very very similar, very similar elements between those two pieces of entertainment there, and that's how I got into watching it a while back, and I really loved the show. So seeing what happens when it comes back, that'd be pretty exciting. It's only two more years off, but hey, it's coming.
I've always understood there's been a clamoring for more Twin Peaks and that kind of things ending off with Agent Cooper and understanding a little bit more of the mystery. Like, yeah, there's always been a desire for it, but I don't recall Lynch being, you know, dedicated to returning it, or like a huge upswell and like, oh my god, we need to get a new Twin Peaks series. I'm happy that there's more of it going. There's going to be more Twin Peaks, and of course, David Lynch getting the paycheck, that makes me happy. But just I don't ever recall a huge demand for it.
Yeah, it's hasn't been like heavily widespread that they, you know, people were clamoring for something for another like Twin Peaks season. I know it's definitely been in the talks to do so, but like after, I think after the second season and just after that prequel movie came out, where people didn't like it at the time.
Firewalk with Me.
Yeah. I ended up seeing that. It wasn't bad at all. It's just that I don't know what people were. Other people were expecting some answers after like the ending of the second season, and you know when they didn't get it, they got kind of pissed off. So I mean, I didn't watch the show at the time, so I couldn't really say what the thoughts were on that. But that kind of seems like what I got out of it after reading some articles about it. But yeah, that seems like just what may have happened there. But it just after that, it just kind of fizzled out a little bit. But it's definitely been heavily in discussion to bring, I guess, more detailed closure to that final episode.
Well, and also to be fair, the most expensive set that they would probably have to get is like the coffee house. So
yeah,
not exactly going to be breaking the bank. It's not going to be Game of Thrones level of budget.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, and they also got to put some money out for the log lady. You know, she's in high demand.
As I think somebody photoshopped Patrick Stewart's head onto her body, it's like the captain's log.
It's pretty good. But yeah, I mean, played a couple games. Like today, actually, I didn't get to play it yet, but I did buy it. I've been meaning. It's been definitely something I've talked about since its initial. Reveal of Bayonetta 2 for the Wii U.
Yeah, I heard.
I bought me Wii U yesterday. Played a little bit of Super Mario Brothers on it, and bought me Bayonetta 2 today. I'm excited to play that. It actually comes with the original Bayonetta, so you can play those two on the Wii U with the big tablet like controller. It's definitely that controller is definitely lighter than it looks. It's really. It's really impressive hardware Nintendo got going here. I like
Nintendo
it.
Always makes an interesting choice with their hardware, and it does look a bit cumbersome. How is the controller?
It is pretty good. I mean, it's not. I'm not gonna say it's the best controller out there, but it's definitely gets the job done. Like you can actually, it's made for the convenience of you can play. Either on by looking at the gamepad or at your TV. So if you got maybe some folks, watching you play, you know they can watch the TV and you can play the game off of the pad. Granted, it doesn't look as good as it does on the TV because it's in HD, but it's almost think about it as a console version of the 3DS, except it's not like portable. It's pretty much kind of that the same design choice they're going with two screens. One on the top, one on the bottom. You're pretty much looking at,
and one's usable. One you can touch the one and interact with the other.
Yeah, I haven't actually tested it out because I know that you could probably be in the other room and still play like Bayonetta on it because you can pretty much turn the TV off and you can still play the game on the gamepad if you wanted to, or switch or you can actually it's got a TV app, you can actually control your TV and set it up that way so you can actually you can watch TV and you can also play Bayonetta on the gamepad or vice versa. So it's there for the convenience of so you're not taking up the whole TV if you have maybe like a significant other or some family over, so you can definitely play that. You can play the game on the gamepad.
I live a very lonely life. I don't have anyone who loves me. So, yes.
It is very nice, man. You can actually plug in your earbuds into it, so you can pretty much play the game and have your TV off.
That's cool.
It is really some impressive hardware. I'm looking forward to playing some more of that, mainly Bayonetta 2, and I'm definitely going to be getting Super Smash Brothers. I saw a video of it comparing the versions. 3DS and the Wii U version. I'm very excited for it. There's a lot to that game. A lot of packages for just that $60 price. There's a lot to it. That Wii U, Super Smash, man.
Gosh, I love the Smash Brothers franchise. And just before I get, I need to put in this joke in here. I assume when you're still playing on the TV screen, your Wii U, I assume the gamepad will just have, like, instead of, like, since you're playing it on the TV screen, on the gamepad, it's gonna be a screensaver of Bayonetta's butt, as you know, just right there while you're playing, just like in case you look down, it's like, oh yeah, that's why I'm here. There we are.
Yes, that's the initial reason why I bought it for that game. That's how much of a fan I was of that first one. That's really, really was. Platinum games are make some hell of games.
Yes. Oh God, yeah. It's you know, I will still hold that, you know, they're one of the most interesting types of developers out there. They're brazen, they're nuts. I love the fact that they just go whole hog with the design choice that they have, and they like to do different things, which I especially like. Like, the Wonderful 101 is nothing like Vanquish, and Vanquish and Bayonetta are two completely separate beasts. And they just keep on making, like they were at Clover Studios. Well, yeah. You know, all the people who worked there were just very interesting games that really pushed the envelope. And Mad World. Oh, God, Mad World. That's just a good one. It makes me sad that Anarchy Reigns didn't turn out to be a bigger hit.
Yeah, like you mentioned, they do a lot of different things, and it's very similar genres. I mean, they make really good action games, but they all play differently. And they're not afraid to take risks. That's what I like about them. They don't really play it safe, especially with Bayonetta, because you're always gonna have those folks that kind of get up in arms about Bayonetta just because it's kind of over sexualized. But it's never really done in a humiliating kind of fashion. It's very, I think they use overblown sexuality for more kind of empowerment than anything else, really. Very empowered, sexualized character.
I can completely understand somebody saying, yeah, this might not be in the best taste, and Bayonetta just essentially, everything she does is pretty much sexual. Yeah. And then, but then again, there's also the argument that in the game, she's the one who's choosing to be sexual. It doesn't seem to be like there's a narrative reason that she's doing it for anyone else but herself. And, you know, yeah, sometimes it gets a little bit too much, but it's just like, the fact of the matter is that that kind of story where you have the Joe Pesci clone in there, just like, as supposedly like the comic relief of like the subtle American comedic relief, it's like, yeah, that's pretty much all you're going to be getting out of this game, just like exaggeration. Like, I don't take this universe seriously for a minute. So, especially since, like, you'll be destroying city blocks and then just be like, oh, okay, well, that was over, and just not have, like, a news report saying, like, 5 million died last night as a giant monster destroyed the city. It's like, no, no, it's just about destruction and mayhem and chaos and fun and just exaggerated things. And that includes sexuality on Bayonetta's part.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I really enjoyed it, because it's fun. It doesn't take itself seriously. Mm-hmm. That's the main key points on why I like it so much, and plus the gameplay is really addicting. That's one of the main things as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing that, maybe streaming it, just talking a bit more about it. I can't say too much because I haven't played it yet, but all around I've seen it get pretty good reviews, so I'm really excited to play it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking forward. I mean, just the next generation. I have not picked up a console yet. I don't know what I'm going to be investing in, but Wii U certainly sounds like it's got the best library so far, especially with Super Smash. I love the franchise, and the next one, which is kind of like the final destination. This one is just Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
Instead of like. It was like, what was it, Super Smash Brothers Melee, Super Smash Brothers Brawl. I thought this one was going to be like Super Smash Brothers beating your face in, but no, it was just like the simple Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah, definitely. From what I've seen at the eShop, there's definitely a wide array of selections, even from like the virtual console. I mean, you can actually play some old school titles off of there too. I saw Yoshi's Island there, almost bought it. They have Yoshi's Island on the eShop. I'm going to buy it. I love Yoshi's Island.
I never got to play Yoshi's Island on the original Super NES myself, but I got to play it when I was in Australia, and I'm like, oh my god, this is what I was missing all these years. I've been living a lie.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, and just, you know, speaking of, I don't know if you've played this game or not, but speaking of Platinum Games, one of the frequent contributors to Platinum is the creative director Hideki Kamiya. And recently, he released another game just in time for Halloween, too. It's called The Evil Within. And I don't know if you've played it. I purchased it and downloaded it online, and I'm almost done, but would you like to talk about it? What have you been up to?
Yeah, man, I have definitely played the Evil Within as well. You're probably way farther than I am with it, because like the first time I played it, I did not get along with it at all, really, because it kicked my ass. Really, it's definitely true survival horror. Like you can't mm-hmm. play that game like any other action game. You gotta be smart about it. And yeah. it really took me a while to get adjusted with that letterbox, man. I did not like the letterbox in that game, but I got used to it. I mean, there's actually some scenes where it actually looks pretty cool. Like they're going for a cinematic look, but at the same time, it really takes you out of it, because you can't really see, especially for the stealth sections. But you can't see too far. You know, you can't see the way you want to, like you normally would. Like you would pan over the camera in order to kind of get a glance if there's somebody right around the corner. But like, just since the screen's so cut off, you just feel like you're missing something. So I'm always like unsure about it. Second time I played it, I did a little bit better. I was patient. I did a lot of stealth kills. Now that I got better upgrades, my melee's better, so I'm not always like. I'm not always getting hit every time, because the melee, I've upgraded the melee to kind of do some more damage. I'm digging it so far. I just haven't played it recently, since I've been distracted with my recent Wii U purchase, but I'll definitely get back to it for sure. I think I'm on like chapter 4 or 5 right now. That's how far I've gotten. So how are you liking that so far?
I gotta say, you know, Hideki Kamiya, I think this is kind of can be considered the true spiritual successor to Resident Evil 4, where,
yeah, you know, definitely.
It's Resident Evil 4 was a lot more kind of action comedy, I'd say, a little bit more exaggeration, a little bit more fun with the monsters and the mayhem and the characters, but and this one is going to be more somber, more psychological.
There's actually like a Resident Evil nod in the early part of the game. I don't know if you've noticed it, but there was a nod to the original Resident Evil, where they got, you know, the zombie. You first encounter the zombie. He was just like, you know, bent down,
eating half the head.
Yeah, eating half the head, and then he slow motion turns around. I was like, oh man, that's straight out of like Resident Evil 1. It's still mm-hmm. creepy as hell.
That just goes to show you how affecting some scenes are in video games, when they can still get you, even with the graphical updates. It's just like that's still pretty damn good. And you know, they use a lot of the body horror, kind of Clive Barker body horror, and David Cronenberg sort of body horror, disgusting, like, oh my god, I can't really imagine that. Yeah. To pretty good extent, especially in later levels. There's certain, I'll call them brain teasers. You'll see what I mean when you get there. But it's that stuff made me actually nauseous. Where I was like, oh my god, that's just wrong. And it's, it's trying to be obviously the successor to Resident Evil 4. The problem is that it's not as tight as Resident Evil 4, where all the mechanics work. Everything from getting your knife, using your gun, the quick turnaround, the slight jog, even when you're stopping and reloading, that felt good. Jumping down from a roof,
Yeah.
This one kind of feels a little bit more loose with the mechanics, and I think that was just to incorporate running and opening doors and whatnot, and just it doesn't feel as tight and polished, especially with, you know, Resident Evil 4 under Hideki Kamiya's belt.
Yeah, I got that sense as well. I mean, like you mentioned, Resident Evil 4 was more action based. This one's a bit more horror based and also more stealth based as well. Because you gotta do,
yeah,
you definitely gotta be able, well, you gotta be stealthy in some aspects in order to conserve your ammo. Because it's just you could always kind of go a little bit gung ho with some parts. Because you could always lure enemies into traps with that, which definitely has gotten me more times than I've gotten them with. Because the game's so dark, I don't even notice some of the traps.
It's
got me a couple times.
The as you mentioned before, the letterbox stuff. It's for those of you who don't know. Essentially, letterbox is just for the sake of the game, is where you just have the screen, the image of whatever the character and the environment, and then there's just two black boxes artificially inserted on the top and the bottom to make it a more cinematic feel. But it feels really, I don't know, it feels not only intrusive,
yeah,
noticing this, and this is very distracting, but also it hinders a lot of the gameplay, I found out sometimes. And I don't know, I can't for the life of me figure out what they were going for. Because it's like, yeah, okay, I get it. It's kind of like, especially with, you know, the film grain that you can, you know, and there's also this artificial film grain to make it look like kind of an older Hollywood film back in the 70s.
Grindhouse.
But that, Grindhouse. It just turned up so much that I literally had to go back in and just like, this can't possibly be done on purpose. And like, the film grain was automatically turned up to 100%. Like, what? Who would want 100% film grain on this? It's like it's snowing in here. And then just the letterbox stuff that gets me, just because it gets in the way of the gameplay.
Yeah,
because you have sections where you try to do stealth, but the problem is a lot of times you're crouched and your camera is focused on what's in front of you, so you can move around, and you can't see the button prompt to say like, okay, now you can stab him, or you can't see the guy turning his head around and looking right at you because the letterbox is blocking it.
Right, right.
Or even worse are the traps. Because sometimes the bottom letterbox will block out, if you're going to step on a bear trap or a mine. And it just gets kind of infuriating. Just like, what was the point of this?
Well, they will say it's for stylistic purposes, but from what I've seen of it, like I would gather that they did that for gameplay purposes, to actually improve the frame rate, because it gets a little, even for like a next console game, even on the PS4, it gets a little bit a little bit choppy in some parts, and like the texture, there's like a lot of texture pop-ins as well during the cutscenes. I would gather it was done because of that a little bit, but regardless, they would say it's for stylistic purposes. I wish it would give you the option to disable that. Maybe in a patch they would. I mean, if people have addressed the issue enough, because it definitely is at first really distracting and definitely gets in the way. But if once you play it for a couple hours, it's still there, but it's not as bothersome as it was. You just got to get used to it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I would rather that it ran at 30 FPS with, more noticeable texture pop-ins than just having letterbox. That's just how I feel, where it's just,
right, I hear you.
I can't, if the gameplay is being intruded on just so that it looks its best, then it's, I feel like that's a big no-no in that area.
Yeah, it's definitely a failure on their part, because you gotta prioritize what's gonna be more enjoyable to play than what is more better to look at, or you gotta compromise. You gotta figure out what's more important. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll make some choices like that that may leave us scratching their heads, but it probably in the end, they should have maybe designed it a bit better for it not to do that. Okay, we're back. Get that recording started up.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I had to take care of a few things, one of them being some carpet cleaner. My dog had decided to, this wonderful, glorious day, a bit of diarrhea. Unfortunately, he couldn't be let outside, so he went to my room to go release his bowels. And so,
Damn.
I was very, yeah, so just, fortunately, I think I've gotten it out, but, yeah, I've gotten the carpet cleaner to set up, and I just had to clean that up. But anyway, speaking of a Shocktoberfest, that was very shocking coming back home.
Sounds about appropriate for this time around October, man.
it's like the shot from The Evil Dead where it's just like the twisting, camera goes right up to Bruce Campbell's face. No!
God.
Why couldn't you hold it in for one more hour?
Man, that's crazy.
Mm. But yes, The Evil Within, which my dog expelled his evil within out. And
better out than in.
Anyway,
man.
I'm sorry?
Better out than in.
You bet. Well, depends on who's cleaning it up. But, I like the designs. I definitely like the, this is more action horror, kind of something more like Dead Space or Resident Evil 4, a little bit more action, but it's still, there's a good amount of scares in there. There's really ingenious designs, especially one with the, I think he might be kind of inspired by Pyramid Head, where he's just he's like Safe Head, where he's just
I was gonna say the guy with the safe on his head.
Yeah, they don't really explain him. Maybe they explain him at the end, but I think he's just like another creature in the mind. And it's like, oh, that's too bad. You could have really done something cool with him. Ever since, I think Irrational Games really spoiled me on creature designs and explaining settings, because they go through detail about everything. Just in voxophones or audio logs and just, explain, oh, this is why this is. And, this is kind of traditional, oh, let's just design something cool and put it out there.
Yeah.
And,
it sounds about right.
Yeah. The only thing that they really kind of explain is one of the bosses who... I don't want to say anything. But anyway, I like the fact that it's kind of this creeping horror. There's kind of sub-stories if you pick up the notes and the newspaper clippings of what went on before with the main character before and the main characters before this all took place, and which is kind of this depressing story, which is works well, but I can't remember, Castellanos, I think, is the name of the main character. He's just so boring. He's not like Leon Flock of Seagulls, action one-liner superstar cop. He's kind of like just this detective. He's not very interesting. He's just plain yogurt. And they really missed an opportunity, I think, to give an interesting protagonist. But I gotta say, Jackie Earle Haley's in this game.
What?
And oh god, he's awesome.
Oh man.
As Rictus, I think. Ruvik, I think, is his name, and he's excellent in this game. Just because, if you want somebody with a deep gravelly voice that obviously sounds psychotically disturbed, you get Jackie Earle Haley. You see him in Watchmen and Shutter Island. Okay, yeah, this guy is obviously deranged. Even before he opens up his mouth, you just feel this presence of, even before he's on screen. It's like, something feels disturbed and not quite right. Oh, look, it's Jackie Earle Haley. That's why.
Yeah, he's good at playing those types of characters, or is he playing a character? There you go.
He's actually just replaying his role from Bad News Bears.
Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
So, it seems like solid. It's not great, you know, which is too bad, just because it's Resident Evil 4 is one of the benchmark games of all time.
And it's pretty enjoyable. I mean, if you like horror games, it's very pretty traditional horror game, because the ammo is very sparse and you gotta play a little bit smart in some levels for sure, because I couldn't tell you, because I was streaming this when it the week it came out. I was streaming the early part of the game where you go inside this barn, and then this one of the bosses, I think you fight with the chainsaw, is chasing you throughout that whole level. I couldn't tell you how many times I died at that part. It pissed me off so bad, because I still haven't gotten used to the letterbox and everything else, so it took me a while. And I remembered that there were some traps in some houses, that so you pretty much can lure the boss into one of those traps and pull the lever, and you could take him out easily like that, and you don't have to use your bullets. Fortunately, I did that and figured that out. So that was pretty well worth it. It's not just like a set level you're stuck within. You actually can lure him out to probably the beginning of that level, and then kind of lure him into traps or anything you may have encountered before meeting him, so you can take him out easily like that. That was pretty well designed, how they
give you some options.
Yeah, give you some options, and actually it can actually chase you and break down doors. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. It's always nice when you can do things. You know, one of the big criticisms of Deus Ex Human Revolution was that the bosses, you could only really fight them one way, which is kind of direct confrontational, like a shooter, instead of something either stealth-based or technician-based or what have you. And I like the fact that they're at least accounting for a little bit more of different play styles with, by giving them, you can sneak around and then trap them inside one of these other traps just to make, and kill them that way, rather than just, being guns out, suns out, guns out.
Yeah, really, really good stuff. I would probably, I'd give it a chance, maybe when it goes on sale, for sure. It's definitely worth checking out. I mean, if you're a horror fan, you probably already have it by now, but yeah, I'll definitely play a little bit more of it when I get the chance, just to finish that. I'm just waiting for Steve the helicopter guy to show up to give me some backup. That'd be awesome.
Get out of the way.
I get like a Boston accent. Something.
Yeah, first round's on me. I'm gonna be retiring tomorrow. Oh boy, I just purchased this new boat with my wife. Oh man, I just realized my wife's pregnant. I can't wait to live my life. Oh no. Here comes badness.
Helicopter gets shot down. No.
I like how Leon's like, "No, Steve!" And then it's like, "Wait a minute, you just met him 5 minutes ago."
I said, "We'll avenge you, man." I was determined after that scene. I was like, "I'm ready to fight this final boss, man." They killed this man. He was backing me up, giving me some air support. And I thought that actually one moment where I felt like I can make it in this game. I wasn't alone.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's obvious, there's something about unseen pilots that give you a nice bit of empathy towards their situation. Maybe just because they're always just doing their jobs and delivering you safely. For instance, I just got the same feeling of when Fauxhammer was killed in Halo Combat Evolved, where she's, she's throughout the entire game just as your wingman, always picking you up and always making sure that you're all right. And then at the end, you're just like, oh man, she bit the dust. I'm really sorry to see that. More so than the other Marines on the ground, just because she never had a chance, because she's in the helicopter. That's their tomb if they get shot down.
Right. Yeah,
Sadly, no Steve. No Steve yet.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Steve. But there's some few similarities with that in Resident Evil. I was actually hoping we'd get the shopkeeper in that game, but the only The only close thing that you can do to upgrade you, you'll encounter these mirrors that take you in some other dimension. You know, it allows you to save there, and also you sit in an electric chair to upgrade your skills, which is weird, but
pretty cool. They shove pins into your head, and I guess it's like that you can experiment on yourself and like turn off parts of your body, like parts of your mind that control your body, so you can just like, oh, I can deal with more damage because I've chosen not to feel pain anymore.
Craziness.
Yeah.
Craziness and the unknowing in that game doesn't really explain anything, but it's just there. It's there for setting up horror, and it's good. It's good for that. So definitely check that out if you want to play something horror related for this month. Definitely a good time for it to come out. We'll see how well it does. I think it's been out for a week or so, but it's definitely worth picking up. I noticed, since we were on the topic of horror games, you are playing another horror related kind of game.
Yes, I am.
Alien Isolation, man. I haven't purchased it myself, but I've seen a few LPs on it. Mm-hmm. It seems like an interesting game. I was a little bit unsure whether to get it or not, just because of the whole way you play the game, especially like the save system, which kind of got me a little bit iffy on there. But how's your experience been with Alien Isolation? I know you're a fan of Alien, right?
I do like the original movie. I like Aliens. I'm not as crazy about it as some other people, but I gotta say that it is a well-made game. It is like 8 out of 10 to 10 out of 10. It's
nice.
I would highly recommend it. I've certainly, I think, got a little bit more money's worth than I did from The Evil Within. It's a faithful game to the first Alien, where it's just this crawling, creeping darkness with a little bit more mythology from Aliens in there, and a little tiny bit from Prometheus. I won't spoil and say what is what, but an interesting little side story. I kind of feel, the closest game that this is actually related to, I would say, is Chronicles of Riddick: Escape from Butcher Bay, where it's this really high-polished kind of side story. There's no real story. There's a lot of interesting mythology and characters and just locations and things to explore and discover for yourself, but it's not that really great of a story. And especially since Amanda Ripley is not the most interesting character. You kind of just know that she's an engineer in the beginning. She wants to find the last message her mom sent off. And that's about it. You don't really learn anything new about her, and that's kind of a big misstep. But anywho, the presentation is phenomenal because they make this look retro, futuristic sci-fi, where it looks like everything was designed with the 70s in mind, just like of the type of corridors, the type of sort of idea of like what the future would look like back in the day. Like there's posters and advertisements with like everyone with their outrageous hairstyle and kind of chic disco era sort of looks to them, like Parker with his headband. I love him from Alien, but it certainly lives up to its name, because there's just one alien and you can't ever kill it. You're on a space station full of there's a Bioshock feel to it, where all the other people have gone crazy and are will attack you because they're trying to stay alive. Although that kind of gets kind of glossed over pretty quickly on why they would attack you just on sight. Although sometimes they don't, sometimes they do. There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to that, but you can either you can not kill them and go around them, you can stealth it, or you can just use them maybe as a distraction for the alien as he's chewing on them. You can run away, but the alien will kill you. It's one shot, one kill. You can't outrun it. You gotta hide, and it's a very interesting mind game, because a lot of the things that you do, you cannot really get it away. The only things that you could do are use our flamethrower, and that's very, very late in the game. Or Molotov cocktails, which is very, very difficult to make and craft. So essentially, you gotta hide, and also in the game are these androids, which, you know, they're kind of like the low rent model of Ash or Bishop or Dave from the Alien universe, where they're, you know, very, you know, those are very sophisticated robots, and these are just like, these are basically just like crash test dummies with a voice box, and you know, and they're kind of creepy in terms of them, how they react and how they move and what they're doing on the ship. And I love the interaction, because, you know, I saw one of the robots, the Working Joes, as they're called, just examining the Xenomorph, just like standing there and just looking at it and just going, "What are you? You have been logged in for data referral to Apollo. Like, thank you. Very interesting." And then he's just like looking at the Xenomorph. The Xenomorph doesn't even care. Like, it wants living humans. And it definitely nails the atmosphere, sometimes to a fault, though. Because in some instances, you'll be doing these long spacewalking missions where you'll just be outside on a spacewalk, turning on a switch or going up to a radar dish or something, and then you'll walk back. And it's not like Bioshock 2, where you can like collect things outside, or you'll see advertisements for new stuff, or you know, kind of those really cool little moments. It's just kind of this emptiness. And it's like, okay, we get it. You're trying really hard for the creeping, lonely, kind of elongated quiet, but this is kind of a little too much.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And you can also play Crew Expendable, which is, if you get the right copy, or if you pre-ordered it, where it's, you get to play either Ripley, Dallas, or Parker from the original movie, and you're trying to close off the vents to the alien. It's not that long, in all honesty, and probably not that, you know, not, that's not worth it. But I would say it's, you know, it's a good entry into the franchise, although I wish the story was better. You know, it's one of these offshoots that's very well done. The terror is definitely there, especially as you need to get adjusted to, like, okay, the sounds of the alien coming by, just like the absolute terror of it shrieking at you, and just knowing that it's around here somewhere, and constantly checking your radar. And it's definitely one of those games where you know, loving the franchise will also really help you solidify the deal, because it's not entirely that groundbreaking. It doesn't add too much new stuff to the mythology, except for a new company and some new characters. But, you know, it's good. It's good. I wouldn't say it's kind of the universe crafting game that Escape from Butcher Bay was, but I would say it's a very good game for horror fans, especially who want just something where you're actually isolated and alone, and you need to use your wits and play smart.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy those kind of games. It has a little bit similar mechanics, as you would say, for kind of Amnesia, because, you know, you're always kind of either running, well, sometimes running is not always the best option, but in Amnesia you can run away, get away from monsters, but in this one you're kind of, it's sort of the same. You're always just kind of crawling, taking your time, mm-hmm. being methodical as to where you're going to go. And I like how random it is as well. It's not always kind of a scripted event, because the alien can go really anywhere randomly, so you never know exactly what it's going to do. So it's kind of that unpredictability that kind of makes it a bit more worthwhile playing, instead of failing at a certain level and repeating it and knowing what it's going to do. But it's that gets a little bit tedious after a while. But this one, it's you do the same thing again, but it's also random as well, especially with aliens' movements.
Yes, and that's both to the benefit and the detriment of the game, because sometimes the alien will go up into a vent and then will dart away, and then for some reason he'll just like pop up right behind you in a direction that you that was like there was no indicator, and then you'll be dead. Mm. Or and it's like, oh, it really is unpredictable. And also the unpredictability is like, okay, because anything can happen, then there's kind of no standard of safety, which kind of breaks the immersion a little bit, where you just say, like, oh, come on, like, I just saw him go over there.
Yeah, that's what I've seen a few times happen, especially a lot of folks getting killed right when they're about to save. Like, ah.
Yeah, we're back. Oh, that's one of the worst, where you're just trying to get to the save station, and you gotta wait for the three beeps, like, deep, 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 and then you can finally save after a while. But because it's you can't really do that in you know, and you're also defenseless, so you can't also quickly break away from a task to do something like to break away and make sure an alien doesn't kill you, which is once again to its benefit and detriment, since there are, you know, you'll be hacking a computer, or you'll be accessing a screen or something like that, or, as you know, you'll be crafting, and you'll try to get out of there quickly, but you can't because it needs to go through the cycle of the canned animations of, you know, you breaking away from the computer and, you know, doing something else. But, and, you know, that gets annoying, but it's more fun than not. The frustrations, when they come at all, are just minor, and it's you know, they are kind of noticeable things that kind of brought it down just a little bit for me.
Yeah, that's what I've heard and seen. It seems like as a combination of both good ideas and also some minor annoyances that kind of keeps them from being the solid alien game that you were looking for. But that's definitely not to say it's bad, but it's one of those things where it's if they do make another one, it's definitely a lot of room to improve on, especially with what they did with this one. This seems like it's the most loyalist alien game put out there, especially with dictating how ferocious and how powerful these aliens are. It's just not things you can just kill easily with like a revolver. It grounds it into more of that franchise's reality as to how dangerous these aliens are and how careful you gotta be and then in order to survive. So that seems like something I definitely enjoy. I'll definitely check it out when I get the chance.
If you're not a big Aliens fan or Alien fan, then maybe, you know, wait for it to get a little cheaper, but it's definitely at least worth a look and worth a play. It's fun hiding from the alien, but no matter how good of a game it is, it will never beat the horror that is Aliens Colonial Marines, which is just the most terrifying game of all time, because you realize budget and money can be put into this and turn out like crap.
The horror paying full price for a broken game.
It's like the end of Spec Ops The Line, which is like the horror.
That, and once you play, you start playing that Metal Gear Solid song, the nuclear.
The words. Nuclear. Ah, can't believe this shit. I'm dying.
It's getting them.
I got a chest burster laying inside my chest.
It's going to try to kill you before you get that sentence off. Don't disrespect that alien Colonial Marines, man.
Yeah, it was, it's, you know, they're putting these in the bad reviews of the game. they'll send off a chest burst to whoever doesn't give it a 10 out of 10.
Jesus. Imagine that.
It's, it's definitely a, they definitely do their research, especially with how things look, because all the videos of everything, it looks like it's shot through a VHS tape player. So just like everything that was like, they definitely went for broke in terms of making the game look like the Alien film.
Yeah, that aspect of they did a pretty good job, especially coming from a developer that's mainly done like strategy games. They did a pretty good job for their first turnaround, with for kind of like this this first-person stealth
license
game. Yeah, especially a license game has been, this year has been pretty, I mean, not bad. I mean, this year has been pretty good for licensed games since I have been playing, I have played, actually, Shadows of Mordor. And that is quite a good licensed game. I definitely would recommend that one. It's pretty good.
Especially the Nemesis system.
Yes.
The rivalries between orcs and friends.
I definitely like to see that be implemented in a lot more games. I would definitely like to see that implemented in like a Batman game for sure. That would be really cool. For those who don't know, like the Nemesis system in Shadows of Mordor is pretty much just this kind of hierarchy of different levels of orcs that can pretty much gain the rank of kind of like this war chief for that, you know, whatever the highest rank is for orcs. And I guess the higher like leaders you take out, the more experience points you get. It's always a revolving, very random system, so you can always delve into doing that. I mean, that's what I pretty much did like the first 10 hours of the game. I didn't even really do much of the main story missions, and I really got into that Nemesis system. I just dove in, tried to kill all the scouts and all the war chiefs in that game. It's really awesome how they implement that. It's a really good, you might have already heard this, but it's a really good combination of you know, Batman and Assassin's Creed, and I think it does it a lot better than Assassin's Creed, the aspects that it does take from. It improves upon them, and the gameplay is very similar in terms of the combat as Batman's is. You know, very one button to attack and one button to counter and two buttons to do a special move. And it's all there with a bunch of things to upgrade to improve your skills. Yeah. And you know, if you do the main missions, you unlock some abilities as well that will definitely help you out in the long run and just make you feel like a total badass. So it's it's a really enjoyable game. I really liked it. I'm not too read up on Lord of the Rings lore, so I can't really speak to how well it you know, it's faithful to, so I can't really say. But I enjoyed it from what I played. The gameplay really comes first more, I would say, than the story does. The story's okay, but me not being too much into the Lord of the Rings lore, I can't say that I was too excited to see kind of this story take place into the Lord of the Rings lore. But
they better mention Ea and the Song of the Beginnings.
I mean, there was the ring. Well, I'll tell you that. That's all I know is the ring.
They better mention in full the entire Silmarillion, or else it's not a true Lord of the Rings game.
Well, you'll have to experience it when it comes out.
It's coming out in November. That's I don't recall a game ever having that much of a differential release between current gen and next gen.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the process is in that one. I don't know if it's being done by the same developer or another developer under that team, because I know that they're doing the same thing with the WWE games. They're actually putting out the previous console versions first, which is not the final product of the next gen version. It's kind of more of a cut down version of it. But it's once the next gen comes out of it, there's actually more features, and actually the new engine is implemented on the next gen version. So
that's what we've seen with Splinter Cell. What was it? Double Agent.
Double Agent. Yeah, it's almost kind of that route. But from what I've been reading up upon the wrestling game, I'm not sure about Shadows of Mordor whether it's going to be kind of that similar situation or just kind of a stripped down version in terms of like the engine that it's running on. So I'm not sure. You know, we're still at that point where, you know, we're still getting, you know, two versions of the same game out at the same time, so they're not extremely different from one another. But I think next year is when we'll probably start seeing more of these next gen games coming out that are going to be a bit less sparse on the previous consoles than we're seeing right now. Definitely with the Witcher 3, and then
Witcher 3,
and what's Bloodborne. Oh my god, Bloodborne. Man, I need another Dark Souls game in my life, and it's going to be one coming out for the PS4.
I'm a wimp. I could not get through Dark Souls. Or just like, listen, life already kicks my ass too much as it is. I don't need to have a virtual representation of it.
I've said it. I've been trying to get people into Dark Souls. I would definitely recommend you play Dark Souls 2, because that's a little bit more forgiving.
Mainstream for the console kiddies.
Nah, it's a bit more forgiving than Dark Souls 1, because Dark Souls 1, it's pretty rough. The frame rate's a bit rough in some spots, and it allows you to warp between locations, so you don't have to mentally remember where the hell to go. And it's more accessible. It's still hard as hell, but it's more accessible than the first one. I never beaten the first one, but I have beaten Dark Souls 2, 1.5 times. So, I really like it, because it's really really challenging.
I've heard it's a really good universe.
It is pretty interesting. I mean, as you take, you learn from it as much as you want to. I mean, there is some lore and story to it, but you kind of have to investigate yourself. It doesn't really tell you outright what's going on in this universe. You kind of learn by going to some certain spots and just kind of doing your own research on it. It doesn't really tell you anything from my experience. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you the lore of Dark Souls unless I really wanted to investigate it.
Yeah, well, I do like the idea of kind of you. I mean, that's why I love BioShock. It just a lot of the lore and a lot of the stuff is like, okay, you got it. It's obviously, I don't think it's as obtuse as Dark Souls in terms of like figuring things out. But it just, I like it littering the landscape and you discovering it on your own and figuring it out. But I'm also very interested in the sort of Waiting for Godot type of world that Dark Souls is, where it just like there doesn't seem to be anybody else left, and it's this sort of meandering existential crisis, like not nihilist, but a very tragic looking world where it just seems like everything's kind of dying or dead.
Yeah, it's pretty depressing universe, but. Yeah, you still wanna find out more about it. It kind of draws you in with how kind of hollow and gloomy it is. Mm-hmm. It's got really good boss designs. That's really what the game's got going for it. Like some really uniquely designed and just amazing bosses to look at and to be afraid of, because it'd kill you so much.
Mm-hmm. I've seen some of the boss designs it is a very, very interesting game, but just because you've recommended it, I will give it another go and look at.
Yeah, definitely. It's really the most rewarding game you can ever play. Once you figure out what to do and not what not to do, and learn and kind of really study some of the patterns with some of the bosses, which I never really had to do with most games, but this one really does challenge you in ways a lot of games don't, and it's really what you put into it, and it's what you get, and it's more really rewarding kind of game you can play. Well, not for everybody, but it's pretty rewarding.
Well, I now that you said that, I will definitely give Dark Souls another look-see, if just Dark Souls 2, just because I always like to play the games from the beginning, and which is why I kind of was a little bit worried that I'd starting from just Witcher 2 and not playing Witcher 1 would be to my detriment, but I'll definitely give it another try.
Yeah, I felt the same way, but Witcher 2 didn't really bring up too much of what happened in the first one. I never played the first one either, so I felt like I wasn't really missing out, which is good. Like, a game can really stand out on his own without really having to rely on the previous predecessor. It's not like anything Mass Effect where you have to play. It's better to play the first one to get the most out of it, especially with how in depth you get with some of the character interactions. Just having that sense of, I remember that. I remember making this choice in the first one and it being brought back up in some way, shape, or form. I really like that in most games.
Mass Effect, the Mass Effect trilogy was designed from the get-go as this sort of one generational system of, you know, this trilogy of decisions that would be intricately linked to your choices. Where I feel like, as in Witcher, in the Witcher series, at least from what I can understand so far, as well as you know, what they're promising with Witcher 3, is that, you know, they make a story that kind of has a beginning, a middle, and an end. You can make all the choices that you want, but, you know, things will definitely carry on over and won't have much relevance outside of that one particular story with that urine.
Yeah.
I said urine. That's funny, because it sounds like urine. I'm sorry, I have the mind of a 10-year-old. But, you know, it is a very interesting kind of dichotomy between what do they make kind of pass on over to the next game, and, you know, do they allow for character choices to be clearly shown in future games? You know, because they were talking about that for Dragon Age Inquisition, and I have no idea how they're going to do that for the game.
Hmm.
Because, yeah, you know, it's going to be on the Xbox One and PS4.
Yeah, I mean, the same for The Witcher 3. I know that they talked about having your saves transfer over, but I don't know at this point, since with the console difference, if that's even going to work anymore, really. I guess to maybe have some type of maybe menu in the beginning before you start, what maybe you may have choose, but they may also go the route with maybe there'll be some events brought up from the past game that will probably have their own set choices made for you, and it'll just correlate to kind of the rest of the game, and everything else is kind of up to you. But there's really no drastic difference in terms of choices you do make in The Witcher, other than just different paths you take and different characters you meet. That's really the only difference that I've gotten, especially out of Witcher 2, me playing it twice and choosing those two different routes to go on one of the choices you do make in the middle of the game. It takes you on two different paths, but ultimately leads you to the same conclusion to the end. But it just more, it's dependent. It's really more on what you learn differently on those two different paths is what kind of gets you to that very end. You kind of get a different perspective depending on what you chose, which is pretty interesting. Definitely good for a replay value, for sure.
Yeah, so I need to give that game another playthrough just to see the choices that I didn't select, because it's, you know, it seems, you know, the fairly big branching path they have of in that small town, where you're just like, okay, you gotta side with the elves, or do you side with the law?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I am the law.
I definitely preferred the elven storyline, the choice you made. I definitely like that path the most. That was most interesting. I think you got more out of it, more information out of that path than the other one, I figured. But yeah, both paths are pretty interesting. I really like the Yorvis path more than Roach, but that's just me.
No, and I completely agree. I think Roach is kind of a jackass. Yorvith, you know, he's interesting. Like, yeah, it's kind of I do like the really the ambiguity of the whole morality system that they have, but, you know, where it's not tied to like Paragon or Renegade, making it very obvious, like, oh, these guys are bad, these guys are good, or like these guys are aggressive, these guys are passive. It's this very ambiguous sort of give and take, like, okay, I'm not really sure who's, kind of like Game of Thrones, where it's like, okay, these guys have good points and bad points to both of them, and I gotta kind of make the moral decision right now.
Kind of make the best of what you have, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I'm definitely looking forward to see how they continue the story, especially carrying on over in DLC. You know, it was a really good game that did that very well, which was KOTOR 2, Knights of the Old Republic, the Sith Lords, where in the beginning they talked about, you know, there was just a character talking about Revan from the first game, and, you know, I won't spoil it for you, but essentially how you interact with the dialogue, like, he'll think, you know, you'll say, like, either Revan was male or female, light side or dark side, in terms of what happens, in terms of everything. But at the very, you know, just a very interesting how that one is shaped up, you know, just because of a player input choice without having to read any, read any previous save logs. So maybe they could go that path instead, where you just choose in dialogue of what happened.
Right. That's pretty interesting. That's definitely a different way to approach that level of storytelling. can dig that.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I think that's pretty much all I played. I definitely check out Shadow of Mordor. Even if you're not a Lord of the Rings fan, it's definitely really really enjoyable third person action game. It's really really good. If you like the Batman combat system, much like I do, you'll definitely get a lot of enjoyment out of it, and especially that Nemesis system that I brought up is really really interesting. I like to see that. I like to see that be done in more in games for sure.
Absolutely, that looks like a great game. I am a fan of all those games you mentioned, of the Arkham games and the Assassin's Creed games, and I'm a big fan of the Tolkien Middle Earth universe, and so I'm delighted to jump back in it and enjoy it a little bit more, so I'm looking forward to it. So when they release it for November, or if I get a new gaming console, I will let you know as soon as I do.
Yeah, awesome. Looking forward to getting your impressions on that. It's really, really a fun game. Definitely,
mm-hmm.
definitely check it out when you can. I'm digging the PS4 so far, so it's definitely a solid console for sure. I know that there's not a whole lot of titles out for it, but from the ones that I have so far, they're pretty solid. I mean, especially if you haven't played The Last of Us, that's definitely a good starting point for that console. Play The Last of Us. That's my first game I played off of the PS4, and then you got an Infamous Second Son, and then there's Wolfenstein. That's a pretty solid, very old school shooter on a next gen platform. Who would have thought that you wouldn't have you'd have a game with no regenerating health and on a
no cover systems? Console.
Yeah, you can peek out of corners and shoot out that way. It's pretty, and shooting Nazis. Come on, who doesn't like shooting Nazis?
Nazis are like Nazis and zombies. They just like the perfect enemies, because no matter what you do, you never feel bad about killing them. It's like, oh man, I stabbed that guy in the face. That must hurt. Oh well, he's a Nazi, so who cares?
Definitely a lot out there.
Yeah. And I think the last game for both of us that we can talk about that we've played together is, or not played together, but have played in and both enjoyed, that is Destiny.
Yeah. How about Destiny?
Yeah.
I haven't played it since I've beaten it, which was a couple of weeks ago.
I'm sorry, yeah?
No, I was just pretty much it.
That was a game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I haven't gone back to that game since I originally got it, and I sank some time into it, and I'm like, wow, this is just really empty. This is not a very good experience. And just looking online, there's like so many hints of such a larger story and a larger sort of narrative grasp, and it sounds like it was like really gutted and just dumped for. And just, I never thought I'd hear Peter Dinklage sound boring, but they managed to pull the impossible. It just like, oh no, look out, that Ravager over there is gonna get you. And like, at first I thought, I was like, oh okay, he's an AI, he's supposed to be detached, but then like, you can like they're supposed to like animating him to make his ghost seem. Like, it's not the ghost of Peter Dinklage who's directing you. He's not, like, just, like, floating behind you dressed as Tyrion Lannister, but he's just this little AI, little sprite that has these, like, shifting appendages, and it's just, like, they animate him to be exuberant, and he's just sounds so bored.
Yeah, it is... Yeah, his performance was not the greatest. I think overall, I think his is the worst. Like, there's other characters you meet. They're very far few between. I mean, they did a better job than he did. And it's like almost they gave him a tape recorder, just say, hey, when you get a chance, you record some lines for us, and then just one day he's getting out of bed, he gets the tape recorder, reads some lines, and then goes back to bed. The other day, he's hungover, gets the tape recorder, and just starts recording some lines. That's pretty much the best example I can put to that.
Like, oh, Fuck me. There's a wizard over there, I think. Watch out. it's like having it during breakfast, where it's like he's eating some toast, or it's like, oh, like we need to go back to the main hub to talk to Leithowitz about this thing. So, oh, it's still recording. And they get Bill Nighy and Peter Dinklage to voice these characters, and I think Nathan Fillion as well, and they just do nothing. It's just this big emptiness where it's, and not to say anything about the gunplay, where it's like the gunplay is fine, but just it's just so dull as well, where it's just like, okay, it's just the same recycled, you know, enemies and enemy wave types over and over again. With Halo, it's fun because the enemy types all react differently with different enemies. Like with jackals and grunts will act differently when the elites are around, and then hunters are, you know, the real monkey wrench in the works. But with these guys, it's like okay, here's the little guy.
Mm-hmm. Yellow.
That will make you change how you fight. It's just like I've never felt this way about a Bungie game. Even playing stuff like Oni or even or Marathon, where it's like they at least try to do something different. This just feels homogenized and gutted.
Yeah, I would imagine. I was just thinking what your experiences were with that, especially coming from Bungie, because you know they've been pretty, I mean, their past titles have been pretty expansive, especially with some of the, you know, the universe. They're really good at building a universe and having very interesting characters and environments. But this just game just didn't feel that at all. I mean, there's definitely a lot of lore in the game, but it doesn't allow you to access it. It tells you that you unlock this, I guess these Grimoire cards that you can actually view.
Oh, the and read fucking the lore. Grimoire cards.
You can read these lore, but online. It doesn't even give you the choice to access them within game, which is kind of BS.
When trading cards give you more information about the universe than your universe, there's something amiss. You done goofed.
Yeah, it really didn't impress me at all. They're trying to make it more of an MMO shooter than anything else. It felt like an MMO for sure, especially with how repetitive it was and how not well the guns felt. And then, you know, like even having some few experiences with Halo, especially Halo, I think I played Halo Reach. I mean, that felt more diverse with the guns and the enemies than this one did, for sure. And
yeah,
it just felt really, really empty for me. I really didn't get along with it. I just, even me playing it, because I didn't have much people to play with it. You know, me and Steve and Rome were playing it. We played it cooperatively every now and then. Even when we weren't playing together, I couldn't even come up with the energy or enthusiasm playing with myself, because it wasn't fun even by yourself. Even with strangers, it's not really that fun. And
yeah, it's like an MMO, except strip away all the benefits of having a PC and using a laptop, and that's pretty much what, and make it a first-person shooter that's like, okay, middle of the road.
Yeah, and MMOs can be good. It's just like this, like, I don't know, the way they went about it was just not my cup of tea. I don't like doing things over and over again. No matter how good your shooting is, even if the levels aren't diverse or the enemies aren't different enough to get you to do something else, you don't do anything like that. Even the beta, if you played the beta, you played Destiny pretty much. You're not missing anything.
Yeah, you were originally like, okay, maybe this is just like giving us a small taste, and this is just a very small environment. It's like, no, this is exactly what it is. Just over and over again, Ghost needs to hack something, stop waves of enemies, or you go to an area, you need to kill waves of enemies, and then have Ghost hack something.
And, you know, Bungie said that the game the game is a lot different experience once you get past level 20. It's like, no, I'm not bothering getting to level 20. It should be different right out of the box. It should be diverse. It should not be the same
listen
thing.
That crap of an argument didn't fly with Final Fantasy, where it's like, oh, it was like the 13 or 13-2, where it's like, oh, once you get past 60 hours, the game really starts taking off. It's like, listen, the maximum amount I'm willing to wait for a game to get good is maybe a half an hour. And that's pushing it. Like, if you're not good within a half an hour, I'm just saying, okay, this is getting to be some horse shit. You better start doing something to make me really like you, or else we're gonna have a problem.
Yeah, and you know, you and I obviously didn't go in with the notion to bash this game. I don't hate it. I just don't think it's.
I love Bungie.
Yeah, I just don't think it's worth definitely not worth the hype, and it's not even close to being a decent enough game. I just did not really get along with it. I mean, I'd rather play, to be honest with you, this is how bad it was for me, especially at that final boss in that game. It was a huge lackluster final mission. I mean, me and Steve were like, that's it? That's how we were. It was that much of a letdown. I didn't even getting to that last level, I was not enthusiastic at all about it. It looks good in some spots, I'll give it that, but it's not enough for me to go back and play it. Like I mentioned, I haven't played it since I've beaten it, the main missions, and that's about it for me. I'd rather play, believe it or not, I'd rather play that the boss level in Deadly Premonition. I'd rather fight that wall monster than do what I did in Destiny.
Oh, jeez, that is, if that's not a glowing endorsement, I don't know what is.
Put it on the back of the box. I'd rather play Deadly Premonition's Wall Monster boss in this game.
Whoa, whoa, whoa! Them's fighting words. You know, we had the killing of Archduke Ferdinand to start off World War II. Now that's a fighting, some fighting words.
I don't know. It speaks volumes as to a game like Deadly Premonition that doesn't have a high budget and it's not the most tightest of games. You know, and compared to more AAA titles, I have more fun playing that than Destiny. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, because you know, Destiny it just feels like other Activision games, where it's like trying to be what it thinks is what everyone wants, and then it just has no idea what everybody wants.
I don't know where all the $200 million this game's budget went to. Was it? So Paul McCartney for that Destiny theme song.
Oh Jesus! That like I was listening to it on YouTube. It's like, are you sure this is not for a Pixar film, a low budget Pixar film that had no idea of what to do? Because this sounds terrible. This does not sound like a good. How did Paul McCartney do this? Maybe are you sure it wasn't Ringo who wrote the music?
Could be.
Yeah. Oh well. That budget, it made its money back, unfortunately, so it didn't really sink in, but it just, like, it's just such a mess. How did it get this way?
Yeah, I didn't even know how we got out to this point. I really wish I had more positive things to say about it, but it just didn't leave the best impressions on me, replay-wise. I mean, more power to those who like playing it, because I know some people that actually like playing that game, and that's all they talk about, and how like the random loot thing works. It's like, dude, I don't even understand. I do not even want to picture me doing the same stuff like for 5 hours and hoping to get something good.
You know what the biggest slice of that bullshit pie was? Was that you would get like that loot crate of just like of rare. And then a lot of times you'd get like, and then you'd open it, it's like, oh, it's uncommon items. Like, no, you don't. You don't get to do that. You don't duck hunt me, you son of a bitch. You give me, you promise me rare items. You will deliver rare items.
Yeah.
It feels like this wasn't even developed by Bungie. This feels like a studio of, of guys who kind of like grabbed by the Ghoulies with Rare, you know, after they were purchased by Microsoft, where it just like these guys, like, it doesn't feel like it's the same energy, the same people behind it. It feels like it's a bunch of people who took the name and then thought they make a game that's like it enough with the developer's name on it. And it's just, I mean, even stuff like Halo 3 ODST or Halo Reach, like, Bungie puts all of their heart and soul into it, where, like, they don't half-ass anything, or at least they never half-assed anything with the Halo games for the past decade. And then they just come out with this, and it's just like, geez, does everyone have, like, the flu over there? Are you guys okay? Like, are you not feeling that well? Like, maybe it's high fever. Just like, no. People will love grinding for hours to get to the right levels. Like, no. You know, with Halo was built on, you know, it only changed recently. Halo was kind of successful because it's just this instantaneous, instant gratification of, okay, you just have your controls. Now you just go get your weapons and you have fun. You don't have to grind through to get the right, even with loadouts on Halo 4, it's still kind of the same principle where you can just still use any weapon and do well. But this feels like a whole new level of just unfair, especially with the glitch of the cave where, like, people have been getting to like 99 and like getting the ridiculously good weaponry and armor where you can't beat them in deathmatch, so what's the point? And it just gets out of hand, and unfortunately, you know, I feel like this game really let me down, and it was overhyped, and kind of like, I wouldn't even say it's kind of like Titanfall. Titanfall was a good game that I thought could have been better. This is just a mediocre game that I just wanted to be really good, right. And unfortunately, Destiny did not deliver.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Sold based off of Bungie's past games and just hype. That's really what made most of the money off of that.
Dude, I really wanted to like this game.
Yeah,
it's like, I love, you know, they were talking about the fact that it was a game that was kind of more space opera, and I'm like, oh, that's cool, kind of like Star Wars, and it'll be his own Star Wars thing. And this just like, okay, it has no idea what the hell it wants to be, because it's like trying to be like Star Wars and that kind of like that grand mythos, but it still wants to cling to sci-fi trappings and be like kind of what the normal Mass Effect sort of thing. It's like, no, you could do something awesome like Nausicaa, the Valley of the Wind, where, you know, it's kind of sci-fi fantasy, and then this is just, you're not doing anything. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You're doing nothing. You're killing me, Smalls.
you had some hope, especially in the beginning, when you first get to the tower, and you're talking to one of the guys.
And then Bill Nye's character, yeah, Davy Jones.
You start talking to him, and then you have this, the very subtle music playing, and then it really felt, like there's going to be some interesting epic space opera, but like Star Wars, like I mentioned, like the music very sounded like Star Wars, and then it never really went anywhere after that. It just kind of went down and stayed down since then.
Stayed in the muck.
Yeah, I don't know. Some people have different opinions, but I just maybe they were expecting something else. You know, they definitely could do better than this. That's for sure.
Yeah,
but I don't know what happened.
It just. I'm sorry?
I don't know what happened.
No, it got out of hand, and I feel like there were a lot of big warning signs. Like, the first was one of the, like, the longtime writer for Bungie, Joseph Staten, I think his name is, and then, his departure in the middle of production. Like, wait a minute, this guy's been with the company for years. That's kind of worrisome. And then getting rid of Marty O'Donnell, where it's like, this is the guy who wrote the Halo scores. You don't want him on the team? What the hell's up with that? And then it's just like, oh no, we're bringing Paul McCartney. The doo-doo galaxy. There's space for you and me. It's like, no. No, no, no. Nobody wanted this. Nobody wanted this.
No.
C'est la vie. Such is life. Grand experiments.
That's the silence and my lack of words says it all.
Yep. Anyway, you know, fortunately there are good games out there, and unfortunately it's not, one of them is not Destiny. But Witcher. Hey, I mean, yeah. Oi, Witcher! And now, you know, it does start, it's starting to look like now more and more next-gen games are being focused squarely on next-gen rather than either A, them being developed by the same developer for two different ports, so it kind of has to be gameplay similar on both generations, or developed kind of separately by two different teams, where, you know, they have a different kind of gameplay focus and different sort of limitations. But now it seems like everything is now starting to, the last vestiges of the old of the 360 and PS3 generation are kind of, AAA games anyway, are now being focused on PS4, Xbox One, since now the numbers are starting to catch up with, like, okay, now we can sustain ourselves by just doing next gen.
Yeah, I never thought I'd see the day where I barely even touch my 360. I haven't even played much of anything on it. I know there's plenty of other games that I do have that I have not finished or beaten or even played. And there's definitely a lot of other good titles that I haven't even played. I've not even touched it. I canceled my Gold subscription because I'm not even using it really anymore.
Yeah.
It's gotten to that point. It's sad because I put in some good years with this 360. I remember the first game I ever bought was Hitman Blood Money. Oh man, good old times.
Good times. I mean, I'm finding less and less reasons to dust off the online portion of my 360, especially since, you know, I'm getting a lot of, you know, active online stuff. Like, the only thing that's really even keeping me on 360 anymore is Halo 4. Hmm. And then even that, just like, yep, I had fun Halo experiences. Is there anything else? Please, God, is there anything else?
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's... Anyway, you know, I'm looking for... Like, I want to be challenged to play more online games, and so maybe this next generation is the shot in the arm that the industry needs to finally get things up. But fortunately,
we'll see.
You know, had some good games here. The Evil Within and Alien Isolation.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
And you
titles.
And you with Bayonetta too, man.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one, and hopefully, you know, it's a good game.
Yeah, I'm looking forward.
I've heard
to,
nothing but good things about it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing it. I may stream it sometime this week. I'll see how that goes. I gotta get everything set up here. I don't even have really any room here for this Wii U anymore, because I got the setup where it's kind of like this kind of entertainment table thing. It's like three levels. You can put things in between the two. I have the bottom, I have my PS4, in the middle I have the 360, and then the top I have the cable box for my Dish Network. I barely even watch TV at this point, so I'm not sure if I should even bother with that here. So I just mainly have like the Wii U on the bottom right corner next to them. Don't even have a proper place yet for that. We'll see how it goes.
You're abusing your Wii U.
My Wii U, I just got it, and I'm already abandoning it, putting it in the corner there. The shame. It's crazy.
Yeah, it certainly is, and just, you know, maybe, I hope that the next generation, you know, I really enjoyed when the 360 and the Wii first came around. I loved the new IPs that were there, and I loved the innovation and the new franchise that came out. I mean, I think I will hands down say that 2007 was the best year for video games, where we had Portal, Assassin's Creed, and BioShock all come out in the same year, and all be very different games, reaching for different things artistically and creatively and gameplay-wise. and also Mass Effect. And it just, all these different things that really came together and, you know, proved that, like, yeah, this next gen was needed for these reasons. And I hope they do the same with PS4 and Xbox One soon.
Yeah, definitely. It's still too early to, still too early for it, but we're getting close to, that place where it's going to be, we're going to be noticing some games that may push the boundaries of that console and as to what it can do. Hopefully,
Bloodborne, Scalebound,
yeah,
Witcher 3.
Witcher.
Oi, Witcher! I'm having a plowing good time.
And then Batman, Arkham Knight.
I like how they just essentially made the dwarves Cartman from South Park with beards.
Pretty much.
You will respect my thought, hey, Witcher!
That's a good representation of some of those dwarves. They get out of hand. And which two?
When they say hi ho, they're referring to a prostitute.
Yeah.
That looks good. Dragon Age Inquisition, the next Mass Effect game. I do want to see a bit more new IPs, and not just from indie developers either. I want to see, you know, the big AAA guys trying to, you know, go back to the drawing board and make something new.
Yeah, same here. I mean, so far, I haven't seen too much indie games on the next gen platforms really that has blown anybody away yet. I mean, there's some few out there, but nothing has been really pushing the boundaries quite yet. So we may get some of that next year. We'll see. We had that boom of indie games not too long ago, and then we'll see how that transpires on the current gen platforms, I guess you would say, PS4 and Xbox One and Wii U. There you go.
Yeah, the Wii U, the Xbox One. You know, I think with the Wii U, I hoped that third party developers would have taken the Wii and done, you know, it was really only Nintendo that really, or Retro Studios, or like some of the other developers that really took the Wiimote and you tried to do something really cool and creative with their controls, and then everyone else was like, okay, let's make just like crappy little mini games. And I hope they do this time with the Wii U. They use the tablet and use it in interesting ways. And with the PS4 and the Xbox One, I really hope they take all that technology and just pump up everything to the next level in terms of not only just the presentation, but also new ideas, taking risks. I know it's difficult in this economy, and especially in the video game industry, but risk-taking is what makes new franchises and injects new blood, and I feel like he who dares wins. I mean, I think that's why BioWare was so successful with Mass Effect, why Irrational was put on the map because of BioShock. And also 2K to a good extent, you know, with they have Rockstar, of course, but you know, getting them along with Irrational really put them as kind of a main developer, right. And it's I genuinely hope that they really make this generation worthwhile.
I definitely agree, sir. Definitely have some good optimistic outlooks as to the year 2015 in terms of gaming. We'll see how everything goes. There's definitely some potential out there and some new games we may not even know about on the horizon. So that's all we can really do right now is to wait patiently.
And hope.
And hope. A new hope.
Good night and good luck.
beyond that, that's been a pretty good amount of catching up in terms of what we've been playing, and now that there's plenty of other stuff. What's going on?
One more thing.
Yeah.
How about that awesome Age of Ultron trailer?
Age of Ultron. I did see that. I'll have to watch it again because the first time I saw it, I wasn't that blown away by it. I'm sure it's gonna be good. You know, it's still only a teaser. I'm still kind of putting the pieces together exactly what's going on here. I'm not too up into the Marvel universe. I'm not really sure how Ultron plays into the movie, but the scenes that I have seen, it looks good. I mean, I'm not going to say it doesn't. What did you think about it?
Yeah, doesn't look great so far, but that's just, I think, because they don't have a lot of, it's a teaser. But, I really liked it. I loved the creepiness of using the Pinocchio Got No Strings on Me with Ultron as the respectable Pinocchio, where it's like, I love that. I love, the tone that they're really taking with this. I really hope it's even better than the first Avengers, and I am very interested to see what they do with everything. Also, it wouldn't be a Joss Whedon influenced storyline unless there was random ballerinas all over the place.
Yeah, can't expect any less. Anything less.
Mm-hmm. He really likes ballerinas. I guess I can see it. It's like, oh, they're very beautiful. It's like, this is a superhero movie. I would really like to see how he justifies this.
Yeah, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's all I'm working on for right now. But, anything else before wrapping all up?
No, not much. I mean, that's pretty much what I wanted to talk a little bit with you on, just what we've been playing. Definitely be more to discuss, whether it be nothing, whether it be something else non-gaming related. But I'm looking forward to kicking off the latter part of this year with some more podcasts for sure. We'll definitely work something out, like I mentioned. Definitely want to keep it a bit more consistent here and have a set schedule, just so you guys know when we'll be back, and just not have us kind of up in the air whether we've disbanded, because I know it feels like we might have had, if from the lack of response or, mm-hmm. or stuff we've kind of been putting out here. But we just want to let you know we're still here. We're gonna keep it going. Keep it somewhat consistent. Like I mentioned, having that idea of two podcasts a month, one in the beginning of the week and one on the kind of later half of the week, of the month, actually.
Right.
I'm definitely interested in that, and also maybe having some guests as well. I know we haven't had people on the podcast with us in a while, since we did the GTA 5 review, actually, with the BGB guys. That was a lot of fun to do. I definitely like having those podcasts where we kind of mix it up a bit, have some more people on there. I definitely got some ideas and some people who would definitely want to be on. So we'll see how that goes.
I'll be down for that.
Yeah. So yeah. Other than that, I'll just quickly wrap it up. Yeah. I've been getting into comics. I've been purchasing comics, reading some. I'm about to read some Green Lantern. I've been reading some of the New 52 stuff. This is kind of, I guess, this kind of relaunch of DC Comics. I've read some Batman New 52s, and I'm about to read Green Lantern. And I never really read Green Lantern comics before, so this will be interesting. And that's about it. I'm actually collecting issues rather than just like full paperback volumes where they accumulate all the issues together. So I'm actually collecting individual ones and collecting those. We'll see how that goes. I actually read this new one, Batman War Game, I think, and it's pretty much having some of the Justice League, I guess, under some kind of mind control, trying to kill Batman. So we'll see how that storyline plays out here. I also got a Batman tattoo. I think I brought it up to you a while back. I didn't actually talk about it on the podcast, but I did get a Batman tattoo on the upper part of my left arm here. So it's gotta represent the Batman.
Gentlemen, all to impress Kevin Conroy.
Oh, man.
We really need to get him. I'm sure he's just going to listen to that, like, you'll do anything for an interview. Here, I got a tattoo of Batman for you. Ooh, okay, very nice. I'll come back on. But, ladies and gentlemen, it is a badass tattoo. If you have a moment of your time, please come check it out.
Yeah, I'll definitely, I mean, for those that haven't seen it, I posted it on my Twitter, so I'll post it on the show notes for sure, just if you haven't seen it yet. So it's pretty nice. It's actually based off the art from that new 52 comic. It's off of Greg Capullo's artwork. He actually drew Spawn. He's actually the guy who did most of the artwork for Spawn back in the day. So he did a little bit of some Batman artwork for these newer comics that, you know, DC is putting out. So it's good stuff. Really good sign. So I took that inspiration off of that. Got tatted up. And that's the end of that. So it's really cool.
Yeah, it certainly looks like a very cool tattoo, and I think the Dark Knight himself would be pleased.
He definitely will. So if you don't have anything else on the docket here, Mr. CH, we're going to go ahead and wrap this bad boy up. It's really been a pleasure. Glad we got to do this at last, this fine podcast. Got to kind of air our grievances out with Destiny and talk about other games for sure. I'm really, really excited to be back again in the podcasting game.
Yeah, it's I'm very, very glad to be back, man. It feels, it's reunited and it feels so good. You know, just it's good to be back on the podcast with my excellent friend and co-host extraordinaire.
So yeah, this has been episode 155, folks, of Bloody Thumbs Podcast, and I'm Splinter47 and TACH Gorog, as always.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Go check us out on our website or iTunes or the Better Gaming Bureau, or follow us on Twitter. And just remember to rate, comment, subscribe, comment us, and just have a good day.
Yeah, definitely tweet either me or CH. Send them some questions. It's been a while since we had some viewer questions, listener questions, in this case, to make it more relevant here. Like, you're actually watching. You can't watch this podcast unless we do some broadcasting. Maybe you can watch it, but
you can watch the little divots of the audio go up and down.
You can do that. That's a good
old time radio.
A ham radio, Jay.
Yeah, but I'm trying to get more back into it. I'm going to try to do a Let's Play this weekend and then upload it. So we'll get that all up and done.
I'll definitely share that out there. So I'm looking forward to that. So yeah, folks, thanks for listening once again. Hope to see you on the next one, Mr. Gorog, and in some future installments. So definitely, like I mentioned, follow us on Twitter. We'll, you know, as usual, leave all the links below where you can find us, and definitely send them some questions. So that's it, folks. Hope to see you again on the next one, and you take it easy.
Later, everybody. Love you much, and talk to you later.